Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Our election coverage continues with a look at the race for the 87th Assembly seat in Greater Sawyer County.
You ask why I'm running, it's for my grandchildren and your grandchildren. I don't see people looking at the long term. Rather, I see them looking for short-term monetary gain.
Plus,
and there is laughter, and there are good things growing.
She's a Twin Ports talent who's hit Broadway and beyond, and is also a voice for disability culture.
And I'm happy.
We'll catch up with Galen Lee. Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
To be in this
place. Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
And there is laughter, and there are good things grow.
She's a Twin Ports talent who's hit Broadway and beyond, and is also a voice for disability culture.
I think disability informs the music in a really powerful way.
We'll catch up with Galen Lee.
To be in this place.
But first, our election coverage continues with a look at the race for the 87th Assembly seat in Greater Sawyer County.
You ask why I'm running, it's for my grandchildren and your grandchildren. I don't see people looking at the long term. Rather, I see them looking for short-term monetary gain.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Our coverage continues today with another candidate profile for the November election. This week, we've invited those vying for the open assembly seat in the 87th District that covers all, or portions of, Sawyer, Taylor, Rusk, and Marathon counties. We've invited both candidates to join us to share their positions on local and statewide issues. The incumbent is Republican James Edming, a small business owner from Glen Flora, who did not respond to our offer to join us on the air. His challenger is Democrat Elizabeth Riley of Hayward, a longtime English and nursing educator who did accept the invitation and spoke with my WPR colleague, Ezra Wall. Here's their conversation.
Elizabeth Riley, welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I want to give you an opportunity first off to just tell our listeners what you might like them to know about you, who you are, what you do, why you're running for office.
Well, I am a registered nurse by profession. I work as a discharge planner at a critical access facility. So some of our hospitals in rural Wisconsin are critical access hospitals, and I work at one of those. Former professor of nursing. I've had a long career between nursing and higher education. So I tend to approach everything from a healthcare standpoint. I'm running for office. This is not the first time I've run. This is actually the fourth time I've run for office, for this office in particular. Running for office did not occur to me until 2010, when Governor Walker and the Republican legislation passed Act 10, which affected not only my husband, who was a public school teacher, but most of the people that we know. And at that point, I thought, well, I've been a spectator far too long. I have to get involved. And since that time, we have watched the problems that have been associated with the current legislature increase exponentially, not just in Wisconsin, but across the country. So I have more passion than I ever have in running for this office. And if people say, what is the main thing you're interested in? Basically, all I can do is say all of it. Women have lost rights to their own bodies. Those are gone now. And the Wisconsin legislature, including my opponent, doesn't seem to want to provide us our rights in return to try to get them back at all. Our state is suffering in education not being funded at the state level as it should be in our K through 12 programs, as well as our university programs. We have seen the systematic disenfranchisement of voters throughout the states, especially in densely Democratic-leaning areas. And I am watching as we get our air and water controls rolled back with large capacity wells and very little oversight for these things. So it's all part and parcel of the same thing. If we can't vote, we can't make anything that's good happen for us. And everything is part and parcel of the same thing. It's all interconnected. So to ask why I'm running, I would say it is to save the state of Wisconsin.
Speaking of the state of Wisconsin and it all being connected, going back to that phrase from many, many years ago about it's the economy, fill in the blank with the rest of it. But businesses are facing significant workforce challenges. They've got a lot more jobs open than workers available to fill them. What can lawmakers do to help that situation?
I think that what we can do is to work a little harder to support our entrepreneurs and do what we can to help people know what jobs are out there. I think we can do things to help people increase the pay of workers. Wisconsin's minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour. I think we can also provide better education, better funding for education, allow teachers to actually teach students how to think critically. And if we have more funding for our trade schools as well, we would have a more prepared workforce. But what we've got right now is a systematic destruction of education. And without it, it's going to be very difficult to place any workers we've got.
On the issue which you mentioned before of abortion, you referenced women's reproductive rights. Wisconsin's law that's now in effect with the overturn of Roe versus Wade is 172 years old. And according to a recent Gallup poll, 13% of people oppose abortion in all circumstances, while 35% say it should be legal under all circumstances, and 50% say it should be legal under at least some circumstances. How would you like to see Wisconsin's existing abortion law be updated or adjusted in light of what you said earlier?
Well, I feel like a lot of people feel in that nobody is for abortion. But reproductive health care is women's health care. And the fact that a bunch of people can sit around and say, you know, we've decided that women are not capable of making their own determination for what's best for them is a huge problem for me. I don't think that we need to look at this in terms of, well, we will consider abortion in the case of rape or incest. Nobody knows what goes on behind somebody's closed door in their own home. And it's nobody's right to determine what should be okay for someone and what's not okay for someone. That is a very personal decision that women make, and it should not be infringed upon by people who think they know better and very paternalistically think that they have the right to make decisions for half of the human population.
Elizabeth Riley is the Democratic candidate in the 87th Assembly District. She faces the incumbent Republican James Edming in the November 9th election. The 87th Assembly District encompasses Sawyer, Rusk, Taylor, and Marathon counties, or at least parts of some of those counties. On to the issue of elections. Despite multiple government audits that show no evidence of fraud in the 2020 elections, some Wisconsin voters still have concerns lingering about election integrity. How do you address those concerns and restore faith in the voting process for people who might have some doubts there?
I would ask those people to please look at the evidence and to turn off their Facebook feeds and their Fox News channels. there have been multiple recounts in multiple states, in multiple areas, by multiple people. In Wisconsin, we've just wasted almost $700,000 of our taxpayer money to chase down voter fraud that does not exist. And there are some individuals out there who are going to refuse to believe the truth simply because they are so far caught up in lies that have been told for the past 2 years about the elections in this country. And they just aren't going to be able to see it. But I think if media outlets stopped pretending like this is a on the one side and on the other side kind of issue, because it's not. There is no real election fraud. 3-4 cases in the state, 6 cases in one state, 8 cases in another. This is not a problem. It's cooked up by people who would like to sow distrust, because if Americans don't trust elections, it's very easy to manipulate them, and there are a lot of people being manipulated right now. A lot of people are not going to like to hear me say that, but it's the truth.
Education is an issue that you mentioned being important to you. What would be your top priority in terms of education legislation?
I think my top priority would be somehow giving teachers the rights that they used to enjoy as afforded to them by their expertise in education, that they know what they're doing in a classroom, that they know what to teach and they know how to teach it. At this point, we have too many people who are not teachers, who don't know anything about teaching and who don't know anything about education, deciding what is appropriate for either their children or the children in their communities to learn about. And teachers have been pushed to the sideline. They are not able to have any say in curriculum. They're not able to have any say in class size. This is all, I can also say too, that they are no longer even allowed to claim on their tax deductions the money they spend furnishing their own classrooms with supplies. Let's not forget that you can deduct the cost of your fuel for your private jet. And I always like to remember that when I look to see what teachers no longer can claim on their taxes. But I think this is a problem. I think, this is my opinion, I think that there are many people who have realized the value of trying to keep people ignorant, because an ignorant workforce is a malleable workforce. And I think there is a push on not to educate people in the state of Wisconsin and, frankly, across the country, because what we saw happen here starting in 2010 has exploded across the country. And I think by removing teachers from the equation, that was step one. And then stop your funding, that's step two. I think this is an insidious thing that's happening in education, and it has to be stopped.
You have not shied away from your expression of differences between people across the aisle from you. But I'm wondering, are there any opportunities for cooperation there? A lot of people talk about partisan rancor that exists now. What are the opportunities for bipartisan cooperation that you see as you run for a legislative seat?
Well, I surely hope there is room for bipartisan cooperation. Yes, I am very passionate in my beliefs. And yes, I feel that one side of the political spectrum has caused great damage to our democracy as a whole. I think that there is always room for people to work together, but people are going to have to learn to work together. In my job as a nurse, throughout my career in nursing, I see patients and I see that they are in a situation that I know is not healthy for them. And I also know how difficult it will be to change in order to make healthier decisions. I think everybody in every situation has to learn how to be a little bit more flexible in the decisions they make. One of the interesting things that I've always thought, I hope this doesn't sound stupid, but I have often asked people who are on the opposite side of the aisle from me to please convince me to be a Republican, because I would do it in a heartbeat if it made sense to me, because you don't have to argue about anything. It seems like all you have to do is just follow whatever your leader tells you. And I'm not used to that. I'm used to a free exchange of ideas, and I mean a free exchange of ideas, listening to other opinions. But other opinions have to be based in fact in order to have a real discussion. And as long as there are a whole group of people who refuse to look at facts, look at science, look at education, it's hard to see where you can make inroads when that's the case, when people don't want to see the facts. I mean, a fact by definition is true. You can't say, well, those are your facts and these are my facts.
The environment is an important issue, especially in the many rural parts of Wisconsin, including the district that you're running to represent. How should the state address environmental issues? You've got PFAS contamination, other water quality issues that people are concerned about. You've got concerns about concentrated animal feeding operations, CAFOs, potentially polluting aquifers and waterways. What should the state legislature be doing to make sure that our environment is protected?
I think, first of all, they need to restaff the DNR with scientists and people who have a vested concern in things like keeping our air and water clean for future generations. We have not had that. We haven't had oversight. I think that local control would be a wonderful place to start. But then again, you get back down and you have to look at who it is you're electing to be on your local board. You, generally speaking, are going to need to find people who are willing to be educated about the effects of climate change and to actually try to do something about it, looking at the long term instead of short term gains. So, number one, get scientists back on board, look at evidence, look at what's happening, talk to experts, and then do what we have to do in order to decrease our carbon footprint. It just seems like such an old phrase to use, decrease our carbon footprint. But we have to, because if we don't, we're not going to have a planet to share for our grandchildren or their grandchildren. I mean, you ask why I'm running, or if anyone does, it's for my grandchildren and your grandchildren. I am not seeing the changes we have. I don't see people looking at the long term. Rather, I see them looking for short-term monetary gain and things like mining and not having any controls on emissions, not having any controls on pollutants is just going to make things worse. We need to be dedicated to this.
That's Elizabeth Riley. She's the Democratic candidate running in the 87th Assembly District in western and west central Wisconsin. She is running against James Edming, the Republican. He's the incumbent. And that election is on Tuesday, November the 9th. Elizabeth Riley, thank you very much for joining us today on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. And thank your listeners, too.
Certainly. This is election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio.
And that was my WPR colleague, Ezra Wall, speaking with 87th Assembly District candidate, Elizabeth Riley. Coming up, her distinctive music has taken her to Broadway and is a powerful voice for disability culture. We'll catch up with Galen Lee. Thank you. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. The violin, voice, and name of Galen Lee need no introduction in the Twin Ports, and that's rapidly becoming the case nationally ever since she won the NPR Tiny Desk Contest in 2016. It's now taken her to Broadway, where she wrote the score for the production of Macbeth earlier this year. She did that while also promoting and celebrating disability culture, especially among musicians. And she's working on her memoir, and she still found time to join us here on the show. Welcome to Simply Superior, Galen Lee.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
So, although you and I have known each other for whatever, the world has taken notice of you, and of particular note, of course, is the Broadway production of Macbeth. So tell us briefly, how did that happen?
Yeah, last summer, basically, I got a call, an email from the producers of the play. They didn't tell me what it was for or anything like that. They just said we were curious if you'd be interested in composing music for a show on Broadway.
And you said, no, not at all. Right, yes.
Well, actually, ironically, I was like, I don't know, because I was so focused on, I wanted to work on my book last year. That was my big project. But of course, I took a meeting because I was like, well, that's silly not to even consider it. So then I did take the meeting, and it was with the director, and I really liked him, and I liked his vision. And it was going to derail my book. Like, you know, my book's not done yet.
You're talking to Mr. Book Not Done Yet for the last 30 years. So I know a little bit about this.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Oh, no. Okay. Yes. Well, hopefully that will not be me. I'm still working on it now. So I'm like, okay,
right.
Back on to the book. But
right.
But I took the meeting with the director, and he was really cool. And he actually, even though the play was Macbeth and it starred Daniel Craig and Ruth Negga, and it was a very big production that way in the director's career, Sam Gold, he is known for conscientious casting? He has a term for it, but he really makes a point of diversifying the casting in a way that's meaningful and not just kind of tokenism. And so he wanted me to do the music. Obviously, he was a big fan from the Tiny Desk, and he had kept listening afterwards. But in addition to that, he just really wants to see more disability representation in theater, and he thought this would be a cool way to incorporate music that he thought would fit the vibe, plus just kind of be in line with his mission as a director.
Mm-hmm.
He had like non-binary actors, and it was very racially diverse, but in a meaningful way where like people brought their lived experience to the characters. I just really respected him a lot. So it was like a 6-month project that was really cool, but it stretched my brain quite a bit. It was very different than anything I had done before.
Well, I'm interested in, on the one hand, you just talked about the progressive approach of diversity with a capital D and all its beautiful forms, but it's still Shakespeare. So were you thinking to do, I mean, I love the Elizabethan, you know, lute music. Were you thinking of that?
He was basically like, do not make lute music. So that was like the number one directive. So he really wanted it to be atmospheric and dark. Actually, a good song to kind of demonstrate that is the song that made him call me is called Metsukukia, and it's on my most recent full-length album, Learning How to Stay. He was on the subway, I guess, and listening to Spotify or whatever, and he heard that song, and he's like, that's the feeling I want. So that's when he thought about getting me involved, which is pretty cool.
We're speaking with Galen Lee, the violinist, singer, songwriter, and composer of the music for the Broadway production of Macbeth. Can you suggest a selection from that?
Yes, it's called Perfect. This song was the very last thing in the play. Almost all of the play was instrumental, but this is a song that kind of came to me right around the time I got the job, and I thought, wow, this really fits Lady Macbeth, her kind of plight of trying to grasp for something and then realizing that she had made a horrible mistake. And we actually ended the show, one of the actors sang it on stage, but this is me performing it.
All right, here is Perfect from Macbeth by Galen Lee.
I got it wrong. It wasn't meant to be, wasn't meant to
to be perfect. We were so busy painting, we didn't see the corner. Some days we both felt trapped there, but silver nights were warmer. We navigated love, terms and conditions applied. Some were pre-existing, others grew over time. Behind the scenes, we just wouldn't let it go, wouldn't let it go to pieces. Who knew we'd dig our own graves here? No other would tend them with such great care. Ooh. Tragedies viewed through its own lens, but just out of frame sits an old friend, watching our choices play out in the end, returning each other to where we began. Wish I had known it wasn't meant to be, wasn't meant to be perfect.
That was Perfect from the Broadway production of Macbeth, followed by one of the many instrumental pieces in the play, all composed by our guest, Galen Lee. So another activity that's taking up a lot of your time, I don't know if it's also holding you back from your book or not, but you've been very active with the Recording Artists and Music Professionals with Disabilities group, or is it RAMPD? Do you pronounce the acronym?
We call it RAMPD. Yep.
RAMPD. RAMPD. Okay. I knew it was supposed to say something. So tell us about that. Right?
Yeah. Well, in 2021, I was on a bunch of panels for disability and diversity, and three or four of the panels also featured a musician from New York City. She's a blind Black EDM singer named Lachi. And we got to talking after one of the panels, just like, you know, we are grateful that people are starting to talk about disability as diversity, but there's still no real resources for professional artists. Once they, you know, once you're starting to do it for a living, you're pretty much on your own to navigate accessibility and equal treatment in the media, like just kind of all the issues that go with disability, the barriers to, you know, even just being able to get into venues or to use recording software if you have vision issues. Things like that just aren't being addressed for professional artists. There's a lot of programs for kids to get involved in music or for recreationally, you know, doing music, but the professional part is a missing piece. And so she said, you know, I've been thinking about starting this group, RAMPD, and I was wondering if you'd want to co-found it with me. So she's the founder, definitely the head. I mean, she has put in so much time I can't even fathom, and she's done such amazing work kind of galvanizing the whole movement, but I co-founded it with her in order to kind of, you know, say like this is not just like one artist platform, like there's a lot of us. So
right.
we started meeting with a small group of people in the summer of 2021, and we officially launched in January, and we have had two open calls for applications. So it's not like you automatically get in, because we really are looking to make sure it's professionals who are doing it for a living. And a living is broadly defined. Like when you're disabled, sometimes you can't earn over a certain amount of money, or you lose your health care, which is a terrible part of American society that we need to change. So it's not always based on finances, but what you're doing for the majority of your days, right? If it's music, we want you to apply if you have a disability. And so right now we have 65 professional members, and then our mailing list is like 600 people. So it's grown a lot in this first year. I recently stepped down as vice president because exactly what you're saying, like I have other projects that I just haven't been able to really get a lot of traction on, but that's also was the intention is we want it. It's not like Watchy and Galen's thing. It really is a community of a really diverse range, like racially diverse and gender diverse and disability diverse. You know, I've learned a lot more about what the needs of blind artists are, for example, right? Like the way that you present your social media, like alt text and captioning and things like that.
Well, I want to back up on that and say everybody should be familiar with blind musicians. I mean, Ray Charles, Stevie Wonder, Jose Feliciano, the list goes on and on. But I doubt that, you know, the millions of fans take into consideration exactly what you're talking about. And that's one disability.
You're thinking of it that way.
Right. And not to mention Beethoven. I mean, you know, everybody says how ironic it was, but it was more than ironic. I mean, he needed to compose this stuff.
Yeah, and that's the thing is our main driver is not actually, I mean, accessibility is a huge part of the work that we're doing, but our main driver is to promote a concept that we call disability culture. You know, like I think disability informs the music that you make in a really powerful way, and it wouldn't be the same music. Like if people like my music, then they should care about venues being accessible because it's one and the same. You know, like I'm me. I make the songs I make because of my disability, and because of my disability, I need access, you know? And so Beethoven, for example, probably wouldn't have made the same music if he hadn't been dealing with, you know, his hearing issues and going deaf and stuff. And so, like, I think it's not like a despite their disability they did this. It's because of their disability, they created this music, and because they're creating music that we enjoy as music lovers, we have to start thinking about how can we be making the music industry more inclusive and accessible, because otherwise we're kind of, talking about diversity without really backing it up.
So is there a song that speaks specifically to the activities of the group, or I'll just say disability culture?
Yeah, one of my favorite disabled artists is Wheelchair Sports Camp. The lead rapper is Kaylin Heffernan, and her song It's Hard Out Here for a Gimp is probably one of my favorites from the disability community generally. But there's a lot of other ones. Lachie's an amazing vocalist and songwriter. Ruth Lyon, L-Y-O-N. She's like a pop singer, and she's also in a band in England called Holy Moly and the Crackers. And then the song that I'd say of mine that most closely relates to this is called I Wait. And it's also from Learning How to Stay, and it's about just kind of needing a seat at the table.
All right. Well, let's hear I Wait by our guest, Galen Lee.
Thank you.
that was I Wait by our guest, Gavin Lee. We are talking about a whole bunch of stuff from Macbeth to disability culture, particularly as it relates to music. And a book you got to get done. When are you going to get it done? I'll be your conscious since I'm very good at books that I haven't written yet.
Well, I mean, I'm writing it now. So I have an agent, actually, but we're not sending it out to publishers until we get this, like, there's like two chapters worth that have to be like totally perfect. So it's a work in progress, but I've been trying to write at least 4 days a week. And I'm hoping that
there's only really seven in a week, by the way, and a normal work week is five. I just want to remind you that.
Yes. I don't know. I'd love to have a rough draft by the end of the year, but I don't know. I mean, we'll see. It's a lot harder than I thought. Like, I know this sounds silly, but you know, like some of the stuff that you write about is like bringing up stuff that wasn't awesome. And anyone who's written probably already knows that. But I have not written like about my life in this way before. Like this current chapter I'm on is about a time I got really sick. And it's been pretty intense to like revisit some of those memories. But I think it will be hopefully overall entertaining and not too heavy. And I want it to be educational with the overarching theme of just like, if people get the support they need, disability is part of your identity. It's not a liability.
Now that you've done a Broadway score and I've been introducing you as composer, I'm wondering if you're thinking of other, maybe more, I don't want to say serious works, because your works are pretty serious, okay? But, you know, oratorios or operas.
One thing that won't be ready till July of 2023 is I'm working with the storyteller, Kevin Kling. Mm-hmm. He and I are actually working on like a play together. So some sort of performance art where we're going to combine music and lines. We are like literally starting it like this last couple of weeks. What's kind of fun about having the Macbeth experience is I'm more comfortable, I think, taking on something that feels a little out of my range, because that, you know, that went well and it worked. And so I'm really excited to work with him. He's also a disabled person. And that'll be in Minneapolis in July 2023.
All right. Perfect time for you to come back on the show. But can I say you can't come back until your book is done?
Yes, it'll be done eventually, I swear.
How about a song to take us out from any of these areas, or just something you would like to share?
Yeah, this song is called The Long Way Around. I released it like 2019, and it's about relationships that take work but are worth it in the end.
All right. We've been speaking with Gavin Lee of Duluth, singer, songwriter, composer, and just a wonderful person. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
When two souls meet and the whole world feels new, shared moments sweet, all colors bright and true, and there is laughter, and there are good things growing everywhere. And I'm happy to be in this place with you. And I'm happy to be in this place.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Rick Lovers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Danielle Kading of WPR News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, Superior Mayor Jim Payne made an announcement last night.
Yes, he did. Mayor Jim Payne announced that he is running for re-election next year, and he gathered with friends and supporters at Bucktails in Superior. And really, he is looking to build on what he says are some of the accomplishments of the city in the last 5 years under his term, citing investment in new economic development, improved streets and sidewalks, and also new construction, as well as investment in the outdoors and improving recreation and connection to Lake Superior in the city. Here's a little of what he had to say.
The things that I'm most proud of, I mean, the city is actually growing in both its economy and its population. We've built millions in new economic development. We've improved streets and sidewalks in every single neighborhood. I'm really proud of that. We had largely stopped a lot of that construction for years, and we've made neighborhoods safer and more beautiful. We've brought a lot of new retail back to Superior, and almost all of it is local retail. It's entrepreneurs investing in themselves and the community, and they've built a whole new shopping district. We've actually managed to lower taxes and fees, something that seemed impossible in Superior, but we've done it. We've done it several times now. And one of the things that I'm personally most proud of and most excited about, we've improved access to wilderness and Lake Superior. We've brought people a greater connection to the outdoors, which is the reason that people live here.
And the election won't be held this November. It'll be held next April. And so far, Mayor Payne is the only one who has announced a run for the city's top post.
All right. Well, also in Superior, utility costs may be changing, both higher and lower.
That's right, Robin. Superior residents would pay less for water service next year as Wisconsin's only oil refinery comes back online after the explosion in 2018. Privately owned Superior Water, Light, and Power is proposing to cut water rates by 9.6% for its roughly 10,000 water customers. And while it's moving to reduce those rates, the Superior utility is also proposing to raise around $3 million in revenue to pay for safety and reliability upgrades by increasing electric rates 3.1%, while gas rates would go up by 8.7% under their proposal. And I spoke with utilities regulatory compliance manager, Jocelyn Scandell, and she says the refinery before the explosion was their largest customer and made up 26% of all water sales. And so that's what drove a roughly 8.5% increase 4 years ago in 2018 when the refinery shut down. And now that the refinery is coming back online, she says they always had the intention of adjusting those rates, and that's exactly what they're doing. Wisconsin's Citizens Utility Board, which advocates on behalf of ratepayers, didn't object to the utility's proposed increases in gas and electric rates, but the group, along with PSC staff, are recommending a decrease in Superior Water, Light, and Power's rate of return on their profits, and they would lower that from 10.4% to 10%. And the group's executive director said that's because customers are already facing a lot of challenges right now, like with inflation and higher gas prices that will affect heating costs this winter. And so the Public Service Commission will have the final say. The PSC is accepting public comments through Monday. And in case you're wondering, Synovus Energy says they're still on track to restart refinery operations in the first few months of next year.
All right. Well, Rick, on the Minnesota side, residents there may be looking at higher tax levies.
Yes, it appears that way. City councilors in Duluth voted 8-0 Monday night to table a resolution that would have established the uppermost amount the city could raise via property taxes next year. Mayor Emily Larson had proposed to set that levy cap 8.9% higher than what Duluth currently collects. Council Vice President and 5th District Councilor Janet Kennedy encouraged her colleagues to take a bit more time to review the mayor's proposal before acting on it. But that hike could have been much more substantial, as the city had already pledged ongoing investments last year that stood to drive up local taxes by 15%. Larson cited four primary factors that shaped the budget, namely financial commitments from 2021 to community crisis response, police wage market adjustments, the rising cost of uncontrolled health care, the benefit of American Rescue plans to keep the levy artificially low, and financial forecasts for the future. Given substantially higher property assessments, inflation, and the inability of the Minnesota legislature to deliver meaningful property tax relief despite a $10 billion state surplus, Larson said the city ran the risk of placing an undue burden on local taxpayers. Under the mayor's plan, the owner of a $200,000 home could expect to pay about $67 per month next year. By law, the city must establish its maximum levy before the end of September. The council's next scheduled meeting is September 26.
Well, St. Louis County is looking at the same issue.
Yes, it is. They're also crunching the numbers right now. The St. Louis County Board is a step closer to finalizing its 2023 budget after giving initial approval of its preliminary maximum property tax levy on Tuesday. Commissioners will vote on final approval of the 4.39% maximum levy increase on September 27. However, many property owners may not feel the brunt of this increase, as the county also saw an estimated 17% increase in net tax capacity. This is according to County Administrator Kevin Gray. The impact of the levy, offset by the tax capacity increase on property owners, could be a $74 average decrease in county taxes on a home valued at $100,000. That doesn't include any increase by a city, township, or school district, which also shows up on your tax bill. Reasons cited for the increase include inflation, the need to continue to fund employee salaries and benefits, and to sustain investments in mental health and substance use disorder services. Commissioner Keith Nelson, chair of the board's finance committee, also cited the state legislature's failure to pass a bonding and tax bill, as he said that would have helped offset the increase. As the board and staff work to finalize the 2023 budget over the next few months, the levy may be reduced, but it cannot increase.
Okay, well, back in Duluth, there isn't anyone announcing a run for mayor yet, but the city may be closer to having a new police chief.
Yes, it is, Robin. Mayor Emily Larson announced Mike Sonoa as a finalist for the police department chief in a news conference on Monday afternoon. Sonoa has served with the department for 24 years as a police officer and held a variety of roles, including most recently deputy chief of patrol. He also served as the department's professional standards lieutenant, and in that role, he worked in internal affairs investigations and reporting, technology initiatives, recruiting, hiring, and training. He has a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from Minnesota State Moorhead and a master of science in public safety executive leadership from St. Cloud University. Larson said that she's worked with Sonoa as a trusted part of DPD's command staff for many years. Now, the search included internal and external candidates. The previous chief, Mike Tuscan, announced his retirement in June and stepped down August 1st. Laura Marquardt has served as the department's interim chief since Tuscan retired. The selection will go before the city council on September 26.
All right. We've been speaking with Rick Lovers, executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music from Macbeth by Galen Lee. Stay safe, everyone.